Chapter 7. Following the Equator. There are two times in a man's life when he should not speculate. When he can't afford it, and when he can. Mark Twain. Mark Twain had started his own company in order to publish The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn himself, while Charles L. Webster and Company, named after Mark's nephew and business manager, took orders for the book, Mark went on a 4-month lecture tour to earn money. Webster and Company didn't plan to publish books by other authors, but then Mark learned that former President and Civil War General Ulysses S. Grant was writing his memoirs. Mark offered Grant twice as much money as another publisher had. That clinched the deal. Grant put the finishing touches on his book just days before he died of cancer in 1885. The book was an instant hit. Mark paid Grant's widow nearly $500,000 in profits. Grant's best-selling memoirs made Mark rich, too. "It seems to me that whatever I touch turns to gold," Mark marveled. America's most famous author turned 50 that year, and his future had never looked brighter. The family lived very well. They held elaborate dinners for important guests, including Generals William T. Sherman and Philip Sheridan of Civil War fame. On Friday evenings, Mark's friends gathered in his third-floor study to drink, smoke cigars, and play Mark's favorite game, billiards. The wild success of Grant's memoirs convinced Mark Twain that book publishing was a better way than writing to make lots of money. He signed Sherman, Sheridan, and others to write books for Charles L. Webster and Company. But none of those books became bestsellers like Grant's. Mark Twain was a brilliant writer, but he was a terrible businessman. It was the age of new inventions, but unfortunately, Mark Twain invested thousands of dollars in all the wrong ones. A steam pulley, a marine telegraph, a mechanical organ, and about 100 others. Alexander Graham Bell gave Mark Twain the chance to invest in the telephone, but he said no. He didn't think the telephone would catch on with many people. Of all Mark's bad investments, the most disastrous was the Page typesetter. This enormous machine could set type as fast as several men could by hand, and Mark was convinced that every printing office in the nation, the world even, would need at least one machine. But the machine had more than 18,000 parts, and it kept breaking down. Month after month, for 14 years, Mark poured his savings and Livy's family money into the typesetter. He was sure it would make his family millions of dollars. It didn't. During this time, Mark wrote A Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court, a story of a New Englander who's transported back in time and tries to modernize medieval England. But with bills mounting, the income from Mark's books could not cover the family expenses. The sad solution was to leave Connecticut and live for a while in Europe, where costs were lower. The family closed up the beloved Hartford home. "We had to leave so much treasured beauty behind," Clara remembered. "We could not look forward with any pleasure to life abroad. We all regarded this break as something resembling a tragedy." They set sail for France in 1891. Mark kept writing while abroad, but still the debts loomed. In 1894, Webster and Company went bankrupt. Mark owed $100,000. He resolved to pay back every dollar. During this time, Mark wrote a serious novel titled Personal Recollections of Joan of Arc, which he and his family considered his greatest book. But he knew that lecturing was the only way to bring in the kind of money he needed. So Mark, Livy, and Clara set out on what Mark called Our lecturing raid around the world. Susie and Jean stayed with their aunt in Elmira. In just over a year, Mark made nearly 150 appearances. He spoke to sold-out crowds across the United States and in Australia, New Zealand, India, South Africa, and England. Mark was 60 years old and often unwell, and the tour was exhausting. But it made him famous around the world and gave him material for his last travel book, Following the Equator. At last, the tour ended in London in July 1896. Susie, aged 24, and Jean, 16, were to depart from America and meet Mark, Livy, and Clara in England. It would be a happy family reunion. But Susie never made the journey. She developed spinal meningitis and died August 18th. Mark was devastated. Of the three girls, Susie had been the most like her father. Again, Mark blamed himself for the stress he had caused by bankrupting the family and splitting it apart. On August 19th, he wrote, "I have spent the day reproaching myself for laying the foundation of all our troubles, reproaching myself for a million things whereby I have brought misfortune and sorrow to this family."